Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Welcome to the First Cut Podcast Genesis Review. It's over. We've got a lot to talk about. Riviera bit back today, and to join me, none other than Kyle Porter. Hey, buddy, it's been a while.
I know it has been a while. We started out doing these, what, December, January, something like that, and we keep missing each other. We're both on here a lot, but never together. So I'm excited to be reunited. It's kind of like when Zach Johnson and Damon Green, is it Damon Green?
Yeah, the caddy.
Yeah, it's like when they're going to get back together in like 20 years at Augusta, just reunited, happy times, talking about the old days. It'll be great.
What will they do? The birdie dance? They'll just do that the whole time?
Yeah, that thing, that might need to go away. It's not great.
Well, he's on, not to derail this within the first 30 seconds of the show, but.
No, please do.
Sung Kang's bag. He's on somebody's bag now, right?
Yeah, Sung Kang.
I saw him doing a lot of birdie dances this week. So it all comes together. Sung Kang finished second. We'll talk about him.
Yeah, Sung Kang, you're like, he pops up on Saturday and you're like, is that Damon Green walking across the 18th at Riviera?
Yeah, it's absolutely wild. Let's talk about this. Let's talk about Riviera because it was biting back all week and most certainly bit back today. 3-under 68, the lowest score out there, available only to three golfers. How do we feel? I personally, spoiler alert, enjoy this, an 11-under winning score.
It was awesome. I mean, I thought it was so good. And you saw 72 average on Sunday. Was easily the highest of the week. I just thought, I mean, like everybody knows Riviera is so good and so classic, and it felt like you had to play. It just felt like you had to play the type of championship golf that's needed to win an event like that. And you know, I think we get into this rut of like, oh, 20 under, 25 under. So and so shot a 63. It's like, well, what does that mean? Is that like a real 63? Or I just think, you know, you go out and shoot. You know, we saw 64 from Adam Scott on Friday. We saw it from Hideki on Saturday. Those are like, that's like a real number. And, you know, great courses separate these fields. And I think you saw separation, with the best players over the weekend. And I thought it was awesome.
I like it when a guy can make the cut on the number like Hideki did and go out and shoot a 64 and he's right back in the thick of it.
Yeah.
And it's not the American Express where if you go out and shoot 6-under par, you're losing ground on the field or at least on the leaders. And there was really no gimmicks out there. I mean, this was not, you know, we're in the midst of the whole, you know, the distance report and our, you know, do golf course, are they getting too long? Is, you know, everything that's going on into this and how do you make courses harder for these players? Well, here's a course that had perfect weather every single day, no gimmicks, and it's just well designed and difficult.
Yeah, and it's pin positions too. You know, you look at, look at five where the tournament kind of turned. I mean, yeah. That pin position back left. You can go after it, and if you miss it, it's going to turn into a double or triple like we saw with Adam Scott and Rory. There was a pin, I think it was on the back nine, 13 or 14 was also back left. You saw Adam Scott hit a sweet draw into there, and he didn't really take it on, but he kind of did, and it just the risk reward there, and it's obviously sort of metastasizes with 10, right? That's the one, that's the right. Famous one that everybody knows, but that's just emblematic of what the entire course is like, is risk reward, playing angles. And I mean, man, it makes for just incredibly enjoyable, viewing experience if you're watching it on TV.
When I saw the pinch sheet come out, I guess it was last night, PGA Tour, you know, tweeted it out. I was like, oh my gosh, these guys are in for it on some of these holes. Like this is going to be deadly. And we saw it. We saw it today. Adam Scott hoists the trophy. This is going to be his first. Well, he unofficially won here in 2005, right? But his last PGA Tour win was the 2016 WGC Cadillac. Played awesome, right? I mean, he goes out, he's won over after Thursday. He shoots a 64 on Friday, and then he's able to hold on to it over the weekend in, again, these really difficult conditions.
I remember that great 2016 WGC down in Mexico that he won. No, I'm kidding. It was a Doral.
I don't remember anything about it.
It was a Doral.
right. Yeah.
But it shows up as like he won a Mexico championship.
That's right.
Adam Scott's like, I've never been to Mexico. So.
Right.
No, he was great. Look, I tweeted this out right before we came on. He, in my head, he's won Riviera like seven times. I mean, he plays great there. He's finished in the top, I think, 11, three out of his last four times. He's just, you know, I think, I don't know. You forget about him. He gets a little lost in all this. I think part of it, he doesn't play a ton.
Right.
He's not out doing all these commercials. He's just not as omnipresent as some of these other guys. And you're like, oh yeah, Adam Scott's like one of the four best ball strikers in the world. And I thought what was impressive, Rick, is he goes 64, 67 on Friday, Saturday. He kind of held it together with his putter on Sunday. I mean, he was like 15th or 20th in the field in putting on Sunday. I thought his hole of the day was at six. He bounces back from the double, makes a two, and he didn't trail the rest of the way.
Yeah, that adversity on five. So Greg Ducharme and I, we were on CBS Sports HQ this morning. We were literally getting off air, like, as the leaders are coming down five, and we're like, oh, Rory's got this, Adam Scott's got this, whatever, whatever. And it is like train wreck city 5 minutes later as Adam Scott goes double on five. Rory ends up making a triple there. But to your point, yeah, that it was wide open. Like, that's when I was like, holy crap, like Harold Varner III could win this. Russ Henley might get hot and win this. Like, I have no idea who's going to come out of this. And it ends up being Adam Scott, which I think is a really big testament to, yeah, that sixth hole, to hit a good shot in there and make a birdie on right immediately after making double is huge.
Yeah, it really was. And then he goes, so he bounces back with the birdie. He doesn't make another bogey until 15. And by that point, he was kind of in control of the tournament. And then obviously he puts the nail in the coffin on 17, and that's a wrap. But, yeah, you know, I mean, look, like, he finished, I think, third in the field, tee to green. You do that at Riviera, you're going to be in the mix if you just putt just average. And, yeah, he was really good. It's crazy to me that he hasn't won in 4 years, huh?
It's really weird, and I kind of want to put this into a historical perspective a little bit. This is his 14th PGA Tour victory. So the only active players with more than that right now are Furyk, who has 17.
Wait, what can I guess?
Please do. I gave you one, Furyk.
Is it on the – I'm not looking at the rundown, but okay, so I wouldn't have gotten Furyk, so thanks for that. Rory's got 18. DJ's got 20.
Yep.
Phil's got 43. Are we counting Vijay Singh with like 33? And then
no.
Tiger's got 82. Is that it?
That's the list. You got
okay.
It. You are worth your weight in gold, sir. Yeah. So, but like, but like that's a pretty great list of golfer. Like historic. Like you're right. People, I don't think Adam's like when I think of Adam Scott, I'm like, he looks good. His swing looks good. Like whatever. I don't know, but like he is legitimately. In a great place in golf lore.
Yeah, he is. You know, I think it's hard because I think you think about the meltdown at Lytham. You think about like, should he have won more majors? Like he contends, it feels like at every US Open. I mean, he's so solid there because those are just, you know, ball striking fiestas and that's his bread and butter. I don't know. It's weird. It's weird to like dock somebody because they should have won more, even though they've won 14 times.
Right.
But yeah, he's had an awesome career and I love watching him swing the golf club. I love watching him from tee to green because it's so, and this goes back to the distance thing, right? Like if you gave those guys wooden sticks and featheries, like Adam Scott would win every week. And if he didn't, then Rory would win because he just finds the center of the club face every time. And you know, he's somebody who I think, along with Tiger, along with Rory, has been, they've been hurt by some of the equipment stuff. And, you know, I wonder how you can't do it, but alternate universe, what would his career look like if, you know, you still had to square it up every single time to get it to go where you wanted?
What would his career look like if he didn't have to move away from the anchor putter?
Yeah, that too.
I mean, he feels like he lost 3 years in there or something like that.
Well, to his credit, I feel like he finished pretty high in putting last year. I've got him pulled up right here. So let's see. So far this year, in terms of putting, he is 10th on tour. And last year he was 31st. Mm. So if Adam Scott's 31st, he was fourth tee to green overall, and then third in strokes gained overall. I mean, he had a really quietly good 2019, and he didn't see a win, but he kind of rolled that into a win early in 2020.
Yeah, and 2020 year of the Aussies apparently, because now we've got Cam Smith, Mark Leishman, Lucas Herbert, and Adam Scott all winning already this year. Aussie, Aussie, Aussie.
Yeah, I didn't even. You know where else they play well?
Honda, Mexico. Well,
I was gonna say Augusta.
Augusta. That would make more sense. I look 1 week ahead at a time. That is literally it.
I don't know about the Australian Honda Classic crossover.
I was
there.
Just like, you know what I did is I said, "What's the next tournament?" And I accidentally forgot there was the Mexico next week. And I was, because I'm gonna be at Honda, and I was like, Honda. Like, just like my immediate reaction to it is like, someone's gonna win at Honda the next time I see golf. But yeah, Augusta would be a pretty good one. They do play well there, don't they?
In Baker Finch just owned PGA National and the Honda Classic, I think. Now it's been a good year for a lot of those guys, and I don't know what Adam Scott's odds are following this tournament, but I think before, like, going into this week, he was probably, I don't know, 40-1 to win the Masters, 50-1, something like that. And if you could have gotten him on that number, you can't do that anymore, but if you could have gotten him on that number, that'd be pretty sweet.
Yeah, certainly rounding into form, but let's talk about the other two in the final group, Matt Kuchar and Rory McIlroy. We'll start with Kuch, who, you know, this was a weird situation. I kind of ping-ponged back and forth on Kuchar, who was the leader after all three of the first rounds, and I was thinking, you know, if he can just stay out in the lead, hit his fairways, hit his greens, not have to really put his foot on the gas and make a bunch of birdies, because that's not really Kuchar's style, I thought he was going to be okay. And things kind of got loose for him today, and he just was never able to really get it back.
Yeah, I mean, it kind of went the way that you sort of thought it would go for him. I mean, it's hard because the thing that's difficult with him, he's so consistent, and the floor is so high. It's just top. I mean, you look at he's got the same number of top fives in his career as Rory. They showed that graphic at the end of Saturday. Of course, he's also played in like five more tournaments.
Yeah.
Or five times.
Right.
But the floor is high. You just don't trust it, like, when everybody's getting after it on the back nine on Sunday. And that's a weird thing. I don't totally know. I mean, I guess he's his own category. You just sort of categorize it as, like, I mean, this is what, you know, I kind of joked about how, like, they introduced him as the bronze medalist on the first tee. That's like so, like, the perfect way for him to be introduced into these events. Cause, you know, backdoor top tens and backdoor bronze medals and all this stuff. So it's weird. Like, at no point during this week was I like, man, you know what? Matt Kuchar is going to win this golf tournament. And yet he was leading almost until the very end. And I don't know. I don't really know what to do with that. How do you kind of reconcile those two things?
I mean, I was waiting for it to come crashing down because he gained like 9.5 strokes putting this week. Yeah. And I was like, there's no way. I mean, Denny McCarthy, who is putting expert, is the only guy in the field who gained more than him this week. And I was like, this is all going to fall apart. Like, Kuchar's done here, and he still gained almost 2 strokes putting today, like in the final round on Sunday. So it's like he did the exact same thing all week. He literally just came up short is the way that I look at it.
Yeah. I mean, it's honestly, dude, it's tough to gain 9.5 strokes and not win the tournament.
I bet you I can go find. Yeah. There's two, it doesn't happen often.
Two different guys did it this week.
Yeah, Denny McCarthy, almost 9 full strokes lost tee to green. That is not going to do it.
If you go double digits both ways, like if you're going double digits gained in one category and lost in the other, that's insane. That's like a historical week.
Rory McIlroy, let's talk about him.
Yeah, we're dropping Denny McCarthy before we go Rory.
We're going to lose our jobs here. All right, Rory McIlroy pays the bills. Let's talk about Rory. You know, when you are tied for the lead going into Sunday, I don't know, Rory should win that golf tournament like 35% of the time, right? Something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, his day to golf was like 33%. Yeah.
Oh, wow. There we go. Okay, there so he goes out, he birdies one, and then the disaster at five, which we talked about, which was the triple, he does the – doesn't bounce back and makes a bogey on six. So he plays those two holes four over par. And then it just looked like he was, I don't know. He was cooked. It never came back for him. I think he made one birdie late in the round, or he made one on 18. He made one on 11, but really nothing else of note here on the back.
Yeah. You know, it's tough because you're like, it's so hard. You go out and you play great for 71 holes or 70 holes and you have a triple. And it just takes you out of it. You know, he was, let's see here, fourth in the field from tee to green on the week, putted fine. He finished, 44th. He was about even, you know, didn't really gain or lose, but he, you know, to compound the triple, he makes bogey at six. And then he had birdies at like 9, 10, made one at 11, but then he had another one at either 12 or 14. And they just weren't there. He just wasn't making them. And then he gets the one on 18. It felt like fifth was like the worst he could have finished, which is exactly where he finished. And I you know, it was disappointing because you want to see guys like that put the pedal down on Sunday and it just save bogey there, you know, just somehow get a five out of it on the fifth hole. And you're still like, you still kind of have control of the tournament. And he just didn't do that. And to make a triple, to recover from a triple that late in the event, it's hard to do.
Yeah, I was really looking forward to this. You know, we had the big boys up in the final group and I was super excited about it. You're right. I would have just liked to have seen even so. Yeah, he makes one of those putts on, I think it was like 14 or something like that. He makes one of those. You can at least put a little pressure on Adam Scott, who if he starts staring down 4 and 5 footers down the stretch, they become a lot more difficult when Rory is breathing down your neck as opposed to like Sung Kang or Scott Brown, who's out there trying to post a number.
Poor Sung Kang. We're just dragging beating him up on this podcast. Yeah, no, I agree with you. And, you know, I don't know. Greg was talking about this on our pregame show, just about how, like, you know, you look back and it was kind of this time last year, everybody was writing that what's wrong with Rory in the final round. And then he goes out and wins like 4 times the rest of the year. I don't know that I ever was really like way in on the final round stuff. I think there was some of it that was true and that was real. Did you feel like any of that played in today?
No. Golf's hard, and this it's not like he was the only guy at Riviera to come in 2 over par today, right? I mean, this place was absolutely biting back, and it's okay. This like one bad hole thing with Rory is something that I kind of think about all the time because I'm a truther. I'm a Rory Open Championship truther that he was like best in the field for like 34 and a half holes last year, and he missed the cut. Cause if you remember, he puts his first ball out of bounds, makes an 8 or whatever he made in, on Thursday. And then he shoots like the round of the day on Friday and still misses the cut. Like he just has like this one bad hole, and Rory, like 99.9% of the holes he plays is like the best player on the face of the earth.
Well, and I think that's why he talks about, you know, I don't know how much you read some of the Paul Kimmage interviews, but he talks about like being mentally just like stealing, like just trying to steal strokes on some of these holes where he would have like either checked out or, you know, kind of rolled over and made double or whatever, but like fighting back on those holes. Because I mean, I go back to this with him at the Masters. You look at this was a couple years ago, but for like 3 or 4 straight years, he had one 9-hole stretch where he would shoot 40. He would shoot 39. And then it just, it takes you completely out of it to where you're having to play a different game. You're not playing the same game that you normally play. And so for him mentally, if he is able to, and I don't know. I didn't see what he said about the fifth hole today. I don't know how much of that was mental. It seemed like the shot he hit into five was from a weird spot. It was in like the coverage gap, and there was a lot going on. So I don't totally know what happened there, but yeah, you just can't put yourself in position to make triple and then have to fight back all day, because that's not the position that he operates out of. He thrives when he's leading, when he's front running, when he's just burying people, and he couldn't do that on Sunday, obviously.
So you know who tried to jump up and scare Rory and scare these guys at the top is Dustin Johnson, who, you know, Kyle, as that train wreck was going on five, I was like, holy crap, DJ's just going to like come out and win this thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, he goes 66-67 in the second and third rounds. He didn't really bookend it with much, but like, DJ's always in contention, and he's just going to go out and win Mexico next week, right?
I know, by like 10 or something. I thought he kind of rolled over on the back nine.
Where in the tour does he rank on like he does that more than most, I feel like.
Well, part of it is his demeanor, so
we'll never know.
Yeah, it looks like he does it more than most, but so if I'm looking at the back nine, so he was two over on the back nine on Sunday. He lost here's the thing that frustrates me is he lost two strokes to the field on his approach shots, 1.75, on his approach shots on the back nine on Sunday. And it's like, is that because you're taking too many risks? It didn't seem like it. Maybe that was the case. Maybe he's going at pins that he shouldn't be going at, but the way the tournament was sort of unfolding, he didn't need to do that. He just needed to, play it the way he played the front nine. He goes out in one under, no bogeys, just kind of doing DJ stuff. And then he just a five on 13, a five on 15. I know 15's playing tough, but I just wanted something more out of that to par 17. It just seems so weak coming home.
This is going to be really corny, and I'm going to wrap this in with Hideki as well. But like this week on tour, I really mean this every single week, but this week specifically, literally every hole and every shot mattered. Like DJ makes three straight bogeys on 4, 5, and 6 in round one. And like, yeah, that's the tournament, right? And Hideki makes the cut on the number, shoots a 64 or 69, and he finishes in a tie for fifth. Like, it was, the margins are so razor thin that this is what I like about your guy, Jordan Spieth, is he never takes a single hole off. He never does. He grinds every single hole. And like, I would love to see it if a lot of these guys had kind of that same, it's Thursday afternoon. I might really need this on Sunday.
I think at this point, it's every single hole is grinding Jordan into
it's grinding him back.
But you're right. Like, I think what's cool about Riviera is, you know, I'm watching on Sunday and throughout the week, and you're always kind of on edge. And again, it goes back to some of these pin placements. I mean, my gosh, like I keep going back to five, but the spot that it was in on the back left, you're like, God, where do I hit it? Like, do I need, like, can I get any spin on it? I need to be over here. Like, that is, it felt like somebody on the broadcast mentioned this, and they were talking about it in relation to the score. I think it was Nance. He said it felt like a U.S. Open had kind of broken out. And I felt like that too, but not because of the scores, more so because of how precise and how decisive you had to be with your shot selection into these greens. And I think that gets at what you're referencing is like, it's all risk reward. This is Andy Johnson fried egg stuff. Like, if you're going at pins, you're going to be rewarded because you're taking a big risk. And if you fail, you're going to pay a big penalty, like we saw Adam Scott and Rory do on five. So because of that, it always feels like things are a little bit on edge, but it always means the tournament is kind of hanging in the balance because anybody can get on a run for any given amount of time, in any of these rounds.
Yeah, it's really true. And what I thought was going to happen, because I jumped in and bet him at 66-1 this morning, is I was waiting for Bryson to jump up and steal this one. because before the round, he was like, you know, one of the top five guys in tee to green. He was still losing like a shot and a half putting. And I was like, you know what? He hasn't had his low round yet. Like if he goes out and shoots something real, and I didn't know it was only going to be a 68 that was available today, or like if he would have shot a 67, something like that. But I was like, if he goes out and shoots something really low, like he's in play here. So new Bryson, buff Bryson, ties for fifth. Awesome off the tee, awesome on approaches, awesome around the green, looked really, really good.
Do you know who shot the three best rounds of the day?
I know Cantlay was one of them.
Yeah, three under.
Oh man, I saw it earlier. Was Scott Brown one of them?
Scotty Brown, three under.
I don't know the third.
Vaughn Taylor. possibly still sponsored by Michelob.
Three possibly. Under. Yeah. We'll never know.
Yeah. So Bryson was like, oh yeah, I actually forgot he was playing in the tournament. So he goes 68, 70, 69, 69. He never really, he kind of popped up at the end. You know, it killed him because he made bogey at 12 and then 15. He had an eagle at 11 and you're like, okay, he's eight under. There's seven holes left. And then he goes two bogeys in the next four holes. And so the birdies at the end were a little bit, kind of fake news, I guess, in terms of like whether he could win the tournament. But, he played really well. He played really consistently throughout the week. I would imagine there's not many guys that were 70 or better in all 4 days.
I was just thinking who has four rounds under par, and I'm looking at I'm just glancing through and I can't find anybody here.
He was second on the week, from tee to green, by the way, 57th in putting. Not good.
I was there on Thursday. I was at Riviera on Thursday and I was standing next to him on like 3T or whatever. And the guy is freaking yoked, man.
So like Mike Trout?
Yeah. He's like, his neck is like the size of my thigh. It's unbelievable.
What was your favorite hole, by the way?
I mean, 10's easy. I like, what is it? Like, four or five where the fairway runs out up there and then they got to hit down into, what is that? Like four or five?
Yeah.
Is awesome because you can stand by the green and watch those guys come down and it's like a kind of a blind tee shot for them. They can't really see where their ball ends up and it's just like, and then, or it's gotta be five because then it goes to six tee and then you can watch them tee off six. Like that to me was a great little corner.
I agree. I think in person six is really cool. I think 10's better on TV because 10's weird in person. You almost can't get close enough to experience it.
No, because you have to be behind 11T. 11T is right behind 10, so you have to be behind that. So like you really can't get that close to it. You're right. It is better for television.
Yeah. And 18 obviously is pretty cool.
Awesome. Yeah. All right. Here's what we're going to do. We've got some guys who were a disappointment and we've got to review, fortunately for you, the one and done results. But before we do that, let's take a quick break and hear a word from our sponsors.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period
at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
All right, we're back, Kyle. We've got a couple of disappointments. They're on the disappointment list here, or guys that did not finish as highly as we would have expected. Let's start with John Rahm. Not necessarily a bad week. I mean, a T17 in a field stacked with 9 of the top 10 players in the world and whatever number out of the top 50. Like T17, that if that's going to be your floor, which it seems like it's been, I don't have the rankings up, but I bet you this is Rahm's worst finish since what? I don't know. U.S. Open?
Well, I missed a cut at the Dunhill Links.
That doesn't count.
he was T3 at the U.S. Open. It's been a long time since he's had he honestly one of his worst tournaments, I think. He might have been like T10 at the Tournament of Champions.
He was.
I'm just rolling through his OWGR page in my head. You know what? Here's the thing, though, Rick, about him. The thing that's been a little like concerning for me of late is that he's had – so he didn't play, well, I guess he played Phoenix. I can't remember that one, but at Farmers, when he has a chance to win, he has like this all-time putting week. Like he was awesome with his putter that week. He does it again at Riviera this week. He was fifth in the field in putting. If somebody like Rahm is fifth in the field, they should be like, if not winning, then at least contending. Some of his tee to green stuff is a little like just something to keep an eye on. It's not like I'm not concerned. I'm not, you know, worried about it, but it's something that you're like, I don't know. Like he's 46 this week from tee to green. It was kind of the same number, I think, at Farmers. Some of that is kind of interesting going into kind of the heart of the season.
Yeah, it is interesting. I didn't realize, kind of how bad he was tee to green, lost a half a shot over four rounds. He lost a shot and a half on approach, which is a little nerve wracking. That's not a good sign because that's something that usually is pretty sticky week over week. And to see that from one of the top players in the world, yeah, it's not alarm bells, but it's like, ooh, let's keep an eye on that.
He's probably, you know, just out of sorts with those Adidas shirts that everybody's
wearing. What is that?
It's
the worst.
It looks like the you know, the pennies that you used to wear in middle school basketball, but they were like weird colors. Yeah. I don't know. Who did it look like? I guess I would vote Sergio for who I least wanted to see wear it, but it was not good all the way around.
Yeah, like I'm not going to tell John Rahm to his face it doesn't look good. I'm going to like tell you over this podcast it doesn't look good. All right. Someone else I would not say anything to their face is Brooks Koepka, who, you know, 3 over today, 74. He played well yesterday in the third round, 68. He made 6 birdies at one point. I'm trying to think, was that the first round he went out and he made like, maybe it was the second round. Yeah, he had the most colorful scorecard in the world with 6 birdies in the second round. I think those are all good signs. If you're out there making birdies, making eagles, putting yourself out, he just has to like kind of tighten up all these bad holes. And I think he's going to take some time to round into shape here.
Yeah, I thought the statistical profile for him was good. You know, he was solid from tee to green. He wasn't like elite, but it wasn't in like the worrisome range. His struggles were, I was watching him, I think it was on Friday, finished up on 18, and he three-putted so from like 10 feet so nonchalantly that I thought I was watching, like, you know how they have that practice green up by the clubhouse?
Yeah.
Like beyond, I thought that's what he was doing. And I was like, oh, he's actually on 18. Like it was,
his actual round.
it was unbelievable. I've never seen somebody that nonchalant about a three-putt from such a short distance. So, he's obviously in non-major mode for him. I thought, all things considered, I thought it was a pretty good showing.
I have no idea what to make out of Jordan Spieth. We could do a 10-part documentary mini series on, like, I have no idea. It's so weird. Okay, so he finishes T59. Loses 2 shots off the tee, loses 5 on approach, gains 5 around the green, and loses 1 putting. Kyle Porter, what the heck?
I don't know. I mean, even if you look at his card, he eagles one, but, or yeah, he eagles 1 both days on the weekend. He doubles 8 and 10. He's got bogeys all over the, I mean, he's just like his statistics and his cards look like what I imagine is going on in his head right now, which is not, which is just all over the place. You know, I think I've convinced myself that something had clicked for him a little bit at Pebble on Sunday, just because the ball striking was really good and it was in really windy conditions. It was a difficult day and he hit it great. And then he comes into this week and 54th from tee to green. It was terrible on Sunday. I'm 66th in approach shots. I mean, that's like the opposite of how you need to be contending. And that's where he's lived. I mean, he's making cuts because his short game is like, I mean, it's Aaron Baddeley-esque. It's unbelievable right now, but this is just not a form. It's a formula to like, you know, a guy like trying to hang on and keep his card, not for somebody who's trying to contend for big time events.
I'm looking at just kind of his strokes gained broken down by category over the last, I don't know, 20 tournaments or so. And you kind of mentioned like when you get into double digits of strokes gained in any cat, like that's historical, but like, okay, Jordan routinely gets into like the fours and fives in both directions, which is like a pretty huge range. But the concerning part is it's completely different categories every time.
I know.
Like
I know.
He'll gain four around the green 1 week. He'll lose six at the next week. Then he'll gain five on approach at Pebble and he'll lose five this week. Like that to me is someone like leaking oil would be a compliment. That's just like there's so many holes in his game. I don't even know what they'd be working on to fix because it's everything.
Gushing oil. I mean, I don't know what's beyond that. I think, you know, I watch him play. So some of this stuff, you have to marry it with, you know, what am I seeing also? Not just and golf, I think is so in a good way. Like it's so numbers based. It's so statistically driven. But then I watch him and what I'm watching matches up with what I see on paper. And what I mean by that is like, it looks so complicated for him right now. It looks even when he makes birdie or like when he makes a par, it just looks like a monumental feat. And then you watch Rory and you're like, it looks like he could shoot 64 every day. Now, not that he will, not that he does, but it just the way, and some of that is the way Spieth comes across, even when he was playing great.
Oh, yeah.
He came across as like angsty and just so difficult.
I think I called him neurotic at one point. Cause just like everything's like, it's just weird, right? Like he's talking through every single aspect of everything. And like,
yeah.
it's a conspiracy against him, but it kind of works for him. Like, I don't know. It worked for a long time and now it looks like it's the crazy side of it.
Yeah. And so it goes to both extremes. When you're playing bad, it looks worse than it actually is probably.
Yeah.
So yeah, he just, again, the tee to green stuff has to improve or he's not going to be contending for anything.
All right. You know what's bad now is with the new PGA Tour leaderboard, the way that they rank golfers is, so if I remember correctly, before you'd have everyone who made the cut and their score, and then below them you'd have all of the cut golfers, and now it just does it on raw score, and Tiger Woods is literally dead last in this field coming in at 11 under.
Yeah, and kind of by a margin. I mean, Ryan Palmer was 10 under or 10 over.
That was one hole.
And that was one hole. And then there were three guys at 8, one guy at 6, and everybody else was 4 over or better. So he was in a group of, what is that, 6 guys that were really, really bad, especially on the weekend. I mean, his weekend, 76, 77. I go back to his putter on Saturday. That's as bad as I've seen maybe anybody putt. Now, I get it. They show more of him on TV. We see a lot of the bad stuff that we don't see with other guys. Rick, he was not even like, it wasn't even in the same like ballpark as, I mean, he wasn't even scaring the hole from like 12 feet. It was like bizarre what I was watching. Did you notice that?
Yeah. He was missing like 6 footers by 18 inches, like left and right, which is almost, that's like, it could have been my highlight. Like if I was wearing black pants and a red shirt or whatever, like it was, yeah. And it's not just the eye test. It is literally the stats too. I mean, he lost two strokes putting in round two. He lost like five in that third round that you're talking about, and he lost another something like two today. He was eight strokes in the negative over the course of the last 4 days.
Yeah, 62 putts taken on the weekend. And, you know, I actually go back to the second round. He made – this is almost impossible to do. He made – on his second nine, he made 14 putts, and they totaled 15 feet 7 inches, which is unbelievable. But, you know, it was something different every day. He drove it terribly on Thursday. His iron play on Friday was miserable. I mean – some of his wedge shots on Friday were bad, and you know, we didn't see a ton of him on Sunday, but his iron play on Sunday was actually even worse than it was on Friday. And I don't know. I mean, I don't get super worked up about it in the short term, like looking ahead to Players in Augusta, because we saw some of this last year. He missed a cut at the PGA, looked terrible, then finishes top 10 at Memorial, and you're like, is he going to win the U.S. Open? But I do think it speaks to sort of his long-term viability of like, he's just not going to be able to play as much as he would like to or used to, because weeks like this are going to happen. The question for me is, can you manage it to keep it from happening in major weeks? Can you keep it from happening at Wingfoot? Can you keep it from happening during the Open Championship? And I think that's the part that he doesn't totally know how to control right now.
So he's going to get some rest. He's going to take off. He's not going to play in Mexico next week. I assume he's not going to play Honda, and we're going to see him next at API.
Yeah, that's probably gotta be right. Probably API and then Players and then Match Play and then Masters. Is that the, I would think that's the slate.
Yeah, it's probably got to be it, right? He had success at Valspar, but if you try to squeeze that in again, he's playing too much. I mean, it's just, no, I think that is the most logical schedule for him over the next four starts.
Yeah, he didn't play API last year, but that was because he had like it was something weird, like a stiff neck or something. So in my mind, I'm kind of replacing him playing Mexico with him playing API this year. And I think he will. I mean, I can't imagine that he wouldn't. So that'll be a heavy 2 week stretch with API and then Players Championship.
This is the section of the show where you get to tout a little bit, get to toot your own horn, because we're going to do the one and done update. Kyle Porter,
who
picked the winner, Adam Scott, and it earned you 1.6 million points. Congratulations.
I feel good. I'm up. I'm up. What is that? 5x your score?
Hey! Don't worry about that. We'll get down there. Don't worry about my score.
You know, I did this during Phoenix. I picked Corey Connors, and at the time I was like, I need to switch this to Webb, and I didn't, and I should have, because Webb won. And then this week I pick Adam Scott, and I'm like, I want to switch this to Patrick Cantlay. I really want to switch it, and I'm so glad that I didn't, because somebody who did pick – oh, you picked Patrick Cantlay.
Me and Mark did, yeah.
Yeah, which was a great pick, because he finished, what, T17?
Yeah, 127,000. I didn't know he was going to have surgery on his deviated septum coming. I would have known the guy can't breathe. I wouldn't have picked him.
What is – that sounds like he's going to be out for like 5 years. What is a deviated septum?
I thought it was something in your nose. I think he snores a lot, right?
Oh, okay.
Snoring-ish.
That makes sense. Like, you have to wear one of those masks or whatever?
Yeah, he probably doesn't get much sleep. He probably comes very tired to the course, and then he can't play, he can't putt. So it's like, it's all connected.
This is the research you need to be doing for your one and done league.
Yeah, I'm clearly not going deep enough. That's the problem.
No, I was, I felt good about, I didn't feel great about Adam Scott after round one, and then he just lights it up on Friday, Saturday, and I feel good. There's only two people above a million, and I'm at 2.1. So what will win this? Like, what's the number we need to get to?
I'm thinking like 13 million.
Okay.
Yeah. So you're like one fifth or one sixth of the way there. Something
okay.
like that.
That's good.
I'm gonna need to bank a couple wins. I'm currently in dead last, only slightly behind Mark Immelman though, so I will at least try to not finish in seventh out of seven. I'll try to pass Mark at some point.
Yeah, Mark comes in like Bryson, like acting like he reinvented the entire game, and then he goes, he's only had three people make the cut, so tough week for Mark.
He was telling us how he slayed Rob Bolton in the PGA Tour one and done. He's the man.
This is like Bryson comparing himself to George Washington.
Or like remember when Patrick Reed said he was a top five player in the world? That's like this situation.
Yeah, that was at the WGC Mexico Championship that was yet to be played in Mexico for like five years.
Maybe we'll get someone else declaring that they are a top five player in the world next week. Kyle Porter. You can get him on Twitter at Porter CBS. Anything you'd like to say before we head out tonight?
No, it's just I hope Zach Johnson and Damon Green are able to crack 90 here in 20 years, just like you and I were today, reunited. I hope we get to do this again soon.
Me too. If you like what you've heard, go ahead, leave us a rating, review, subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Rick Gaiman. You can get me on Twitter at RickRunGood, and we'll talk to you next time.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.